Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to KDXU this morning. I'm Andy Griffin. This is, as you can hear from the theme, the Andy Griffin Show, not the Andy Griffith Show. Now, I've got Cody Baxter in with me right now. Cody is a marriage and family therapist. And I'm curious, Cody, how old are you?
I am just about to turn 29 years old.
29 years old. Yep. Okay, so do you know the Andy Griffith Show? You've heard of it and watched it and
stuff? Absolutely.
Okay, good, yep. Good. Yeah, I often ask my kids, you know, because I made them watch it when they were young, and they know it. But a lot of people your age and younger don't really know much about the Andy Griffith Show. But
I sat on my grandpa's lap watching
it. Yeah. Nice, nice. Went down to the fishing hole with him, didn't
you? That's right.
Nice. Mello is here as well today. Hi, Mello.
Good morning. Right?
Appreciate you being here. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be fun, and actually Mello set it up, but I thought it would be fun to have Cody on and talk a little bit about some of the modern challenges, especially that our youth are facing when it comes to mental health. And Cody's the expert, right?
Yeah. I'm definitely learning all the time, but, you know, happy to be here to talk about it.
I appreciate coming in. And Mello, I appreciate you facilitating all this.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Very good job. Cody works for SNS Counseling. Tell us what that is exactly.
Yeah, so it's Strength and Support Counseling. That's what the SNS stands for. Mm-hmm. Counseling office based out of St. George. We also have satellite offices in Hurricane, Cedar City, and Hilldale, Utah.
You out there, right?
Yep. So I work in St. George, Hurricane, and Hilldale.
Nice.
I'll be off to Hilldale later this morning.
Okay.
So, definitely love serving the, you know, population in Southern Utah.
Well, tell us about yourself. Where are you from, and your wife and kids and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm originally from American Fork, Utah. So I'm a caveman.
Nice.
And, you know, grew up in Utah County, kind of bounced around up there. Married. My wife is Emma. We have two boys and expecting a third right now.
Congratulations. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
And how long have you been in St. George? Not that long, I guess.
Yeah, about 3.5 years. So,
oh, okay. You've been here a little while.
Yeah. Yep. So we love it down here. We love the sunshine and love the people down here.
I know one of the big issues here in St. George is affordable housing. Have you been able to get yourself set up and you're okay?
Yeah, we've been all right. It's, you know, it's been a little bit of a struggle, but luckily we've been able to find ourselves into a good place, and we're happy. So.
I'm glad you're here. You said you had two boys and you have a daughter on the way, perhaps.
Daughter on the way.
Hey, yep. That is cool.
Yeah. Interesting time to be raising kids.
Yeah.
Mm. So.
Well, and that's definitely something that we wanted to talk about was interesting time to raise. Now, I'm at the end of my kids. I'm empty nester now.
Okay.
My youngest is 21. Mello is close to me. She still has what? Well, she has a little, I'm not going to call her an oops, a caboose.
A caboose.
That is 8, right?
Yep, he is 8. And then my oldest is older than you, will be 31 next week.
Oh, okay.
And wow. I have like 5 in between. So. Just
nice spread
nice,
there.
Nice yeah. spread. Just I wasn't sure, you know, if I should stop or not. So I just kept going.
Just keep going.
Yeah. Why not? And then I have a 15-year-old at home, too.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, fun ages. So interesting ages that you're experiencing all at once as a parent.
It's not super fun, but I'll take your word for that.
Cody, let's talk a little bit about the development of the smartphone. Now, when my boys were teenagers in high school, they still had those phones where you had to, I don't know if you were old enough to remember this, you had to punch a 7 3 times to get a T or what. Yeah. I don't know what the letters are, but you know, and so texting, you think it would be really hard, and there was no such thing really as social media at that point. But I remember one month getting our cell phone bill back, and my son's little cell, and he was 16, 17, had 10,000 texts.
Wow.
Now, again, this is back when you had to hit the number 3 times just to get one letter or whatever.
No. Yeah.
And he had 10,000 texts on his thing. And I thought, okay, something's changed here in this world.
Yeah.
My oldest son didn't have really texting at all. My third son, thankfully, wasn't really that interested in it. Mm. But by the time, so then I had a 5-year gap between my three sons and my older daughter. And things had really changed, and smartphones had come to be. Tell me right up front your opinion of smartphones, Cody.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I mean, I've got one sitting in front of me right now.
Mm-hmm, and mine's right here.
Yeah.
Yours is right there.
Well, and it's really, when it comes down to it, it's hard to have a phone that isn't smart these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are these machines that connect us to each other, you know. And unfortunately, you know, some of those connections we have are really meaningful, right? And it keeps us in contact, you know.
Sure.
in better ways than it used to.
And we've integrated into our work, too.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. During the week, I cannot not have my smartphone because I need it for work.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so when it comes to an opinion, I think it has a lot of strengths. It introduces a lot of connectivity. Mm-hmm. It makes work easier. You know, we can work remotely because of our phones, whatever it is. But, you know, the fact that, you know, they're introduced to kids at such a young age, right? You know, when I was young, you know, it was the flip phones, right? And having one of those was like, oh my goodness, I can keep in touch with maybe one or two of my friends that happen to have a phone as well. But now it's, you know, you see 8-year-olds with an iPhone and they have access to the same things that, you know, the 40-year-olds do.
The world.
Right? And so I think that they are tools, and I think that they're useful, but I think that they definitely have some detriments, and they can cause some harms that are really unexpected in child development.
I was telling you earlier today, or before you came on, I said, you know, I was laying in bed last night thinking about the show and thinking about how an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old is exposed to right now. When I was 8 or 10, you know, the worst thing I was exposed to, I got a bloody knee once, you know, a skin in my knee, whatever. But you think about, you know, how many 10-year-olds right now have seen, you know, that Luigi guy murder the healthcare official, mm-hmm. president guy, or how many have seen, you know, a guy with his leg cut off, or maybe some kind of unfortunate nudity or sexual perversion. We're talking mm-hmm. about little kids, our little children, and like you said, they have access to, well, kind of everything.
It's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you think about the level of, you know, desensitization, and I get to meet with these teenage clients that are, you know, or preteens that, you know, have had access to this since they were very young. And unfortunately, you know, from a parenting perspective, it's, you know, how do you even know how to monitor? You don't, parents don't necessarily even know where they're getting access. And so even if you attempt to put these restrictions in place, these kids are going to be exposed to these things, whether they want to or not. You know, I've said before that, you know, Instagram and TikTok have this For You page mm-hmm. where it's kind of this customized and catered thing. And I like to say that's the bad for you page.
The bad for you.
Yeah. Because really, you know, you could be scrolling and seeing, you know, animated videos and your favorite cartoons, and then suddenly there's a murder, or suddenly there's an undressed woman, right? And a kid who wasn't even looking for it, suddenly some algorithm is putting this horrific material in front of their face that naturally they're going to become curious about, you know, and as things like that continue to come up and, you know, they start to seek after it, the level of sensitization that they have to that kind of material, you know, and even horrific news, hurricanes or earthquakes and people dying, suddenly becomes a lot less impactful on them because, oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I see that all the time, you know.
Well, I mean, logic tells me that's why we have young people committing murders or school shootings or things like that, because to them, hey, this is just another game of, you know, Player Unknown Battleground, or what's the other one that I always forget the name of?
Fortnite.
Or even Call of Duty or one of those. To them, it's just another game.
Right. Well, and you know, depending on where you're at, I mean, the internet is a deep, dark place. It can be. Right. And I think there's things there that the average person just doesn't even know about. And some of those corners, you know, are really glorifying that kind of behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so if kids find themselves there, then naturally, you know, especially if they're predisposed to, you know, mental illness or whatever it might be, they're going to find themselves, you know, seeing this glorified version of violent behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. You get bonus points if you blow their head off or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's terrible. And
yeah.
So
certainly.
My guess is you would recommend a restriction on how soon a young person could get a smartphone. But my guess is also you actually get people when the cow's already out the barn, so to speak. I mean,
exactly.
They've already been exposed mm-hmm. to that, and that's why they're coming to see you, or maybe not why, but that's one of the contributing factors on why they're coming to see you, is they need help coping with a lot of this stuff. Tell us first about what restrictions you would put your own kids. You have, how old are you, 7 and 5? Or
six and 4.
Six and 4? Okay.
Yeah. So, with my own kids, it's quite limited access to, to any sort of technology like that. I mean, we have tablets and things to help with school and stuff like that, but in terms of free access, But, you know, when you're describing, you know, these kids where the cow is already out of the barn, absolutely, you know, parents are bringing their kids into counseling. My kid's so depressed. My kid's suicidal. You know, why is this, you know, help them, fix them, right? And, you know, one of my, you know, there's a series of questions. Typically, we're doing some kind of biopsychosocial interview where we're looking at numerous factors that could be playing in. But, you know, in that biopsychosocial, it's also, you know, digital. Like, what, you know, what is their relationship like with technology? You know, how much time are they spending on their phone? And then do they put their phone down and go straight to a video game? Do they go straight to a computer? You know, and I'm shocked on a regular basis, and I'm getting to be less and less shocked that, you know, when I'll just casually ask, you know, a 16-year-old client, like, hey, if you pulled up the, you know, the screen time on your phone, you know, because, you know, it can tell us, right? I've stopped being shocked at hearing 15 or 16 hours a day. And, you know, I thought, you know, when I see 3 or 4 hours pop up on my phone, when it sends me that notification, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm spending way too much time. And I'm hearing 15, 16 hours. And I ask them, you know, how is that even possible? And they're on their phone all throughout the day at school. They're staying up till 5 or 6 a.m. and not going to sleep until 5 or 6 a.m. and then waking up at 7:30 for school. So that those hours rack up. It's constantly in front of their face. So, you know, when it comes to the restrictions, you know, I think at very least, and I talk to parents about this every day, is you've got to be able to regulate it at night. If nothing else, that's a great place to start. You know, don't let your kid be on their phone all throughout the night.
That's a good good idea. Now, I put together, and I'm a little bit weird, I guess, I put together a contract with each of my kids when they got a phone, and I outlined certain rules. For instance, you had to dock your phone at night. In the living, in the central living area, and you could never have it back in your bedroom. You know, we weren't allowed on your phone during mealtime, things like that. And they had to sign it. And if they broke the rules, you know, I'd give them a warning. You broke the rules. You do it again, the phone's gone, or for at least for a week or whatever. And I got to tell you though, I felt like I was doing the right thing, but it was hard. I mean, I got a lot of pushback, How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, I mean, kids and teenagers are boundary pushers no matter what. That's part of the brain development, quite literally, is wanting to explore, you know, the level of freedom that they have. And, you know, I think the amount of pressure that you feel from them, right, to, hey, I need my phone, I need that, right? They're obviously feeling some amount of pressure as well. This social pressure of, you know, I remember, you know, I've actually had this situation come up several times with clients where similar situations, I don't know if they had contracts in place per se, but, you know, where parents have, you know, certain restrictions with phones and they'll take the teenager's phone away and, you know, the kid will have a panic attack. They'll have some kind of huge reaction to, you know, I've got these Snapchat streaks with my friends that can't break. I've sent a Snapchat every day for 750 days. I can't break that, you know, and there's these built in, you know, kind of, you know, hooks, right? That keep our kids attached, to these devices, whether it's a streak or whether it's, you know, how am I going to regulate? Right. Oh, and, you know, without this. And so, you know, you're right. And so I think it's having those restrictions in place early. And if you don't have them, discuss it with your kid, you know, be able to talk about, hey, this is why. I'm not trying to, you know, punish you per se by disconnecting you here. But we've got to understand that there's real life here. You know, there's real connection to be had here. And maybe even having some built in, you know, scheduled time for the phone, right? Yeah. And being able to limit that even when they're not breaking the rules.
Good point. I know it's a tough deal because you're trying to tell, I mean, there are some real positives. It's kind of like, you know, when the internet was first popular, everyone was like, oh, it can do all these things. I can be connected with. I mean, I've connected with people I haven't talked to since high school. It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But there, with every positive thing, there seems like there's 5 or 10 or 20 really, really bad things too.
Right. Well, just the limits that it puts on exploration as a kid, right? You know, I think kids want to explore, just like we were saying,
sure,
you know, the boundary testing and things like that. I think we have a tendency as kids, I say we, as if I'm a kid, I feel like I am, but we have a tendency to want to explore, right? And I think that this kind of technology really kind of, you know, makes us settle to the bottom of the pond, sort of, where it's like, I don't really need to explore. I've got everything I need right here.
Right.
And whether it's social interactions, I mean, I know people where, you know, 95% of their social interaction is through that device.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so why would I go outside if I can, you know, play video games and talk to my friends?
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And you know, but you know, you meet that huge detriment when it's like, this is a comparison machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
These kids being on social media, they're thrust into this comparison environment that maybe in real life you wouldn't be exposed to until you were in the workplace, you know, where it's like, hey, I'm competing for promotions and things. But suddenly an 11-year-old is being judged by 35-year-old men and things like that. And they're subjected to, you know, this comparison that it is not healthy for a developing brain.
Right.
They're so dependent on the likes and the shares and the retweets. I don't think it's retweets for kids, but you know,
yeah, whatever it is, they do.
Exactly. You know, but boy, chasing that and the effect that has on brain chemistry, right? And social development for a kid is remarkable, you know, and that need for the dopamine
that
comes from those likes and comes from that reaction that they get from friends and non-friends,
yeah,
you know, it's remarkable the impact that has.
My daughter has a program, an app she uses, where at any time randomly it tells you, okay, it's time, and you're supposed to take a picture with the front of your phone and the back of your, I don't know what the program is called. Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of it. I couldn't tell you the name.
Yeah, I did that for a minute. I don't remember.
It's something like to show your real life.
Yeah, it's like Reels or Real Life or Real something
exactly,
or other.
Yeah.
And basically the idea is to get a picture of you and then what it is you're doing and post it. And then everybody can comment or whatever on what you did. And, it, you know, if you're doing something cool, everybody can say, hey, that is so cool, whatever. And if you're doing something boring, you might get no comments or you might get a negative comment. But
yeah,
it plays right into all that you're talking about the feedback.
Right. Well, and you know, there's apps like, you know, just like you're describing, where it's like, hey, we want you to show real life. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want this stylized version of your life,
right.
You know, but even then it's, you know, if you don't post that picture every day, you know, if you don't follow through with that notification, there's some kind of stress response going on in these kids. I missed the notification. I missed my chance.
That's exactly what I experienced with my daughter. She's like, I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? She's like, I have to do it. I have to keep my streak alive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, if nothing else, that tether of like, you know, the people that care about me, and you know, air quotes on that, you know, are gonna miss what I'm doing, are gonna wonder if I'm okay. And boy, those kinds of tethers are, you know, they're maybe preventing these kids and teenagers from making real world connections and being able to explore, you know, these relationships that they have in real life, you know, and that's a little scary.
Yeah. I found it interesting that at some point kids stopped wanting to get their driver's license. They stopped caring about, I don't care if I drive or not. Well, why not? Well, I got everything I need right here, you know, holding the phone up.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. Because I remember when I got my license, and my older boys too, when they got there, they could not wait for the independence that was represented by being behind the wheel, being able to get in your car and go somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's gone now.
Oh, I got my permit the day I turned 15 and my license, I think probably the day after I turned 16, because my birthday was on a Sunday, you know, and that for me was huge, because being with my friends, going to the places where my friends were, being able to take them places was huge, right? And you're right. I think there's probably a combination of, hey, I don't really need to be anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I've got everything I need here. And I think there's another element of that where it's just the level of anxiety and angst among teenagers is higher than what it used to be, right? And you know, I think phones and social media certainly have a role that they've played in upping the ante on the level of anxiety of just in general.
Been ignoring Mello, by the way. You okay over there?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you're saying. I think another piece of this, though, at least with my 15-year-old, isn't just the phones. It's also like the Netflix shows and the other streaming shows. They don't just watch one show. They're watching entire seasons and then reporting back with friends like, have you watched this part? What did you think about this?
Wow.
Like, there's so binge much watching, time huh? invested in binge watching. And I'm like, where do you have the time? I haven't watched a sitcom in years.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, what you're describing, and I love your feedback on that, because you're in the trenches mm-hmm. on this, right? You're seeing this in real life, playing it with your kids.
Yeah, and with the mental health aspect, too.
Right. Well, you know, if nothing else, it's how much time are you sitting in front of a screen, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know if either of you have seen this or experienced this with your own kids, but, you know, your kid's watching a Netflix show with their phone in front of their face as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my goodness, you're being bombarded with, you know, not only do you not have the attention span to sit and just give your attention to that show, you know, you need to be scrolling, maybe even watching another YouTube video or Instagram reels while watching a show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of fragmented attention is a little unsettling, you know.
It's true.
Yeah.
If you watch a movie or you're trying to decide what movie, you've got your phone out looking up the reviews on it and looking up the likes and when the raspberries or whatever, the rating on that. It's like you said. So fragmented attention is a good way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the other, you know, big piece that comes up for me, obviously I'm a therapist, so I'm thinking about the emotional, you know, parts of, you know, the phone use and things like that. But just in terms of being able to regulate emotions and regulate your mood, right? I see it all the time, even in my therapy sessions. I'll be sitting with a teenager and we'll be having a great discussion. And something a little bit more difficult will come up, right? Either they're distracted by a notification, right? Which, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, I don't really care about that. You know, something that's pretty heavy will come up. Something that had happened to them in childhood, maybe. And, you know, I'll see them grab their phone and literally hold on to it like it's a stuffed animal or like a comfort item, right? And sometimes, you know, I've seen this in real world, like in the relationships I have. I mean, I have a teenage brother and, you know, my wife's younger siblings, right? Where, you know, something difficult comes up. They're in a difficult situation. Mom or dad gets mad, whatever it is. And they go to their phone. They go to, I can see them start to frantically scroll as if that is some kind of mechanism for them of this is comfort. This is distraction for me. Right. And that piece of it of, you know, let's say that phone wasn't available. You know, I've seen people go into anxiety attacks and panic attacks when it's, you know, I need to be distracted from that. And so I think that kids and teenagers who do depend on that as a sort of emotional regulation tool, they're not developing the internal mechanisms to be able to work through difficult emotions and process, you know, those difficult emotional experiences, because they just turn to distraction. And so, you know, you have
instead
these
kids, processing, they're leaving.
Exactly. They're leaving, they're escaping, right? And so, you know, if kids aren't able, and this is what I spend so much of my time doing with these kids, is How do we learn to tolerate these difficult emotions without having to turn to TikTok?
Yeah.
We're not just going to try to, you know, subdue and mask this emotion. Let's really feel it for a minute, just even sitting here in this therapy room. And
but they don't want to, right? They don't want to feel it.
You know, it ends up being a bit of a struggle. Some kids are like, no, I realize, like, I don't want to have to depend on this so much, right? But some of them, it's like, why would I learn that? You know, I always have my phone.
But one point about that, if you notice adults, because I notice adults, like if you go to a waiting room, if you're waiting in line at the grocery store, if you're standing somewhere alone, I make it an effort to not get my phone out and try and talk to people. But people are buried in their phones. Like they're walking and they're still on their phones. They can't for a moment, I feel like that's the zombie apocalypse, is everybody walking around with their heads down talking like on their phone, right?
Now Mello, you stole the thunder on the next segment.
I didn't mean to.
No, we are in tune. That's
okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's get a commercial and weather break in. More with Cody Baxter, family and marriage and family therapist and smart guy extraordinaire. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU. I've got Cody Baxter on the program with me with SNS Counseling. He is a marriage and family therapist, correct?
That's right.
Oh, nice. And we appreciate you being here. I'm gonna start the segment off with a story. So this would have been maybe 4 or 5 years ago. My wife and I were staying at a hotel. We went down. It was later in the evening, about 9:15, to the pool. The pool was closing at 10, so we're like, we'll just go there. Maybe. I know it's kind of selfish. Maybe there won't be any kids there. It'll be quiet, right?
Yeah.
Well, we got there, and as we got there, getting there at the same time was a mom with her three children. And we thought, okay, well, you know, whatever, mom's going to play. But she wasn't in a swimsuit. I thought, well, that's kind of odd. The kids were in swimsuits.
Sure.
And so she let the kids loose. We got, you know, we took off our towels or whatever and got in the hot tub. She came over and sat on the edge of the hot tub with her feet dangling in and pulled out her phone. Her smartphone, and for the next 45 minutes, she proceeded to do everything in her power to not engage with her children whatsoever. And I felt so bad for these kids. You know, they were maybe 8, 6, and 5, something like that, maybe 9, 7, and 5, whatever. They were doing jumps off the pool, and they were playing, and, hey, mom, look, and all this stuff, and she never looked up from her phone one time. The whole time, I mean, she was just on that thing
locked
the whole
in.
45 minutes locked in, and I just was like, mom, you know, these kids are they're desperate for your attention. All you have to do is look up for 5 seconds and watch them jump off the diving board or whatever. Well, I don't think they had that at a pool, at a hotel pool, but watch them dive in, and she would not look up. And I remember as my wife and I left and got up to her room discussing that, and how we were lucky. Our kids were not, when they were that age, there were no smartphones. But we vowed at that point to be better parents. We still had teenagers at home at the time, and we vowed to be better parents. But I just thought, is this common? Is it, Cody?
I would say so. I mean, you know, kind of like I was saying earlier, you know, I have parents come in with their teenagers saying, hey, I need you to help with this, and we'll kind of identify, you know, phone use or screen time as being a potential contributor, right? You know, but I you know, as a family therapist, I involve the family members a lot,
right,
in the whole process of meeting with parents. You know, we're doing group meetings with the parents and the kids and things like that, right? And it's amazing how often you know during those sessions, I've had some of the most uncomfortable therapy sessions I've been in are in these family sessions,
right,
where parents are concerned about their kids, and I'm bringing them in like, hey, let's kind of consolidate and integrate some of the things we've learned here. And I've had parents that don't get off of their phone for the entirety of the therapy session, even when I'm asking them questions, you know, hey, what are you noticing about so-and-so's behavior at home? You know, is he able to handle, you know, these negative interactions with his little brother a little bit better? And, you know, mom will be like, yeah, sorry, just 1 second, you know? And I mean, I've had parents that don't even make eye contact with me during a therapy session for their kid.
Wow.
And obviously that's, you know, that's pretty extreme, I think. But, you know,
maybe it is, maybe it's common.
maybe not, you know. And, you know, I think especially as parents are like, you know, oh, my kid's spending way too much time on their phone. It's like, I'd be curious to see their screen time.
No way, I'm not telling.
we'll keep that one under wraps, maybe. But, you know, I think as parents, we're often just as guilty of giving into that, you know, that escape that kind of comes from whatever's on there.
Yeah.
You know, whatever's going on around me, I deal with that enough. I deal with the stress of life all day long. I deal with the stress of my kids all day long. This is a nice little escape. I'm guilty of it, you know? I think we all have things on there where it's like I enjoy feeling like I can just step out of reality for just a second. And that becomes more and more appealing. So you have these situations where it's, You know, if my kids are entertained, you know, then I'm out of here. Mentally, emotionally, I'm out of here.
Right.
But you don't know what support they have at home, too, with the other spouse. So
exactly.
They could be an overwhelming instance.
That's true.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm glad you said that. It's not always just I'm escaping just because the escape is really nice. It's, we really have no idea. You know, it could be something where, you know, there's a bad situation and things, you know, at home or with a spouse. But certainly, you know, I tend to think that the, you know, the dependence on the phone for emotional regulation is not going to help that situation necessarily either, even if it is, you know, serving well as an escape in those small moments.
That's true.
So I always believe as a parent, you work hard, you set rules, you have boundaries, you do all these things, and your kids will turn out, you know, hopefully positive.
Yeah.
Has this whole social media trumped all that? Is that stuff become more important? You know, I mean, if what kind of message are we sending to our kids if social media and that stuff is important to us too, more important than they are sometimes, even though we would never admit that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it has to do with, you know, our kids are taking signals from us all the time.
Right.
And you know, I like to say that, you know, their childhood, especially, you know, the first 3 to 5 years of life, you know, they're really, you know, learning who they can trust. They're learning who they can depend on. We call it attachment, right? In the psychology world, it's you know, who can I trust? Can I depend on these people? My mother, my father, right? Hopefully you have both, right? Or hopefully you have any of those, right? But, you know, can I depend on them when I need help, when my diaper is wet, when I'm hungry and I cry, are they going to respond to me?
Right.
So those first 3 to 5 years, you know, and then all throughout the rest of childhood and teenage years, anytime that your kids are living at home with you, you know, I think of that as this time where they're kind of downloading the software that they're going to use for the rest of their lives. Right.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And so, you know, if we were just to look at those first 3 to 5 years for a moment, you know, and they start to get the signal, you know, I think about this often of, you know, a child's breastfeeding, right? They're nursing as an infant, right? And they see mom on their phone, which again, I couldn't possibly judge that. Like there's such a need for escape in those moments of motherhood when you just don't have sleep and things.
Right.
But the signals that starts to send to the kid, right? And let's say that keeps up, then eventually the kid, that's kind of built into their software, you know, of, hey, it's okay to be disconnected, right? It's okay to escape, you know, via this, you know, iPad, via this phone or whatever it is. And, you know, I think we, you know, especially the last, you know, since 2010 really is when social media and things really started to prevail as being a lot more accessible and things.
Right.
You know, kids born since then, you know, it's in their lap from a very, very young age, and they see their parents doing it, and so that must be okay.
So let's talk specifically about marriage now. We'll leave the child rearing, but obviously we've learned a lot, and maybe we haven't learned
a lot.
There's a lot
to chew on
there. We've talked a lot about.
Yeah.
But let's talk about marriage now and relationship with a spouse. It has been always been my belief that you cleave unto one and none other, and that's the number one priority in life. I've always felt that way about my marriage, and yet, you know, like you mentioned, the signals you send when you're looking at your phone and you're checking your phone. And I know there are times when, you know, I hurt my wife's feelings by being on my phone. My wife has hurt my feelings by her being on it, even though maybe it was something that was really important. Maybe it was one of our kids going through some kind of crisis or whatever. I had a need at that moment and she wasn't there, or she had a need at the moment and I wasn't there. How do we fix that, or can we fix that?
Yeah, I love that word that you brought up again, you know, these signals, right? I think about relationships, you know, marriages, you know, significant others, even parents and kids or friends, you know, it's all about signals and responses, right? You know, you're giving me a signal, I'm responding to it. I'm giving you a signal, you're responding to it.
Let me do a cliffhanger here, because
please.
I just remember we got to get one more commercial break in. When we come back, he's going to answer that question. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. He's Cody. She's Mello. We're all hanging here, being trying to be cool, yep. Which is really hard. I have a feeling Cody was cool once, but I was never cool.
When he was a caveman.
When he was a caveman.
Maybe back in the high school days. Yeah.
Anyway, Cody is a marriage and family therapist. This was right from the headlines today. I wanted to read it to you. Actually, I might even be able to play it. Yeah, we have some audio on it. A new study shows gender is a large factor in excessive and problematic smartphone use. Listen to this, Cody.
A study presented at the European Psychiatric Association Congress 2025 showed that young females are more likely to experience high social anxiety. Another finding of the study found that gender is tied to the amount of time spent using smartphones and the fear of being judged negatively by others online. The study was comprised of 400 young adults. The study's lead investigator said the results point to a significant difference between genders, as females are more likely to face mental health issues while using smartphones. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Have you found that to be true, Cody?
Yeah.
Females?
Really? Yeah. Absolutely. I think that, you know, there's a lot of similarities in, you know, men and women, you know, and the reasons why they maybe depend on their phones, right? Certainly the social part of it, you know, is applicable for everyone, I think, right? But, you know, I think, you know, there's a body of research that supports the idea that, you know, women tend to, you know, be seeking acceptance.
More important.
Be seeking, you know, hey, me compared to these other women, you know, am I close to that? Am I far off? And, you know, they're using that social media more as a measuring stick for themselves, right? So if I'm not measuring up, perhaps I'm not acceptable. Mm. You know, perhaps I'm not at that level, right? Whereas, you know, men, you know, I think there certainly is, you know, there certainly are some men that are using that same measuring stick. You know, I think we could spend a lot of time getting into, you know, body shaming for men. We don't even need to get into that right now. But it's, you know, for men, it tends to be, you know, the pornography tends to be a bigger issue.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the dependence on phones for that reason. Right. And getting those brain chemicals, the oxytocin and things like that, that, you know, are supplying them with comfort and connection and things like that. Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the marriage thing. I had asked you before the break about smartphones and its effects on marriage. Well, not necessarily marriage, but a relationship with a significant other. Tell us what you've found so far.
Yeah, well, I do a lot of couples therapy, and sitting with a couple in a room, you know, it can be a pretty quick indicator when, really? You know, they're pulling out phones during a therapy
session. Actually telling you, but actually they're acting that behavior out.
Exactly, in the therapy room. And so that's always a, you know, that's on the table pretty quick, you know, at least in some sessions, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there's really something to, you know, hey, it's you and I. You and I are in this relationship together, right? But also I've got this thing I need to address.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know,
you again, and I in the world.
Right. Right. And it can be really, you know, again, there's so many caveats and so many complications that we couldn't possibly address all in 1 hour. Right. But, the fact that, you know, when we talk about those signals and responses, if one of those signals is so frequently, you know, this thing on my phone is more important than what you're saying or more important than our time mm-hmm. together. Again, whether that's the intended signal or not, it doesn't really matter if it's, you know, if yeah. That's what's received by your partner, mm-hmm. right? That whatever's happening there is more important than whatever's happening here between you and I. And that can create some animosity over time, right? That Definitely. Can cause some conflict.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's a difficult thing, you know, when suddenly it starts to create these questions of, do we even love each other? You know, again, I don't think that's all smartphones, but it's, you know, are we even compatible anymore? And that's a big deal.
I know it's a blanket statement, and we don't want to stereotype and have a blanket statement, but generally speaking, if your significant other is on the phone more than they're with you, isn't that really saying this is more important than you are?
Yeah. Yeah, and again, whether that's the intended signal or not, it really doesn't matter. Mm. It really doesn't matter, because if that's how it's received by the
perception
partner.
Perception is reality, yeah.
Exactly. And you couldn't possibly try to convince that partner that, oh, no, that's not what I'm meaning. You can try, right? But it's like, it's the actions that are proving it, you know? And to try to convince them otherwise would be difficult.
I know, speaking of my spouse personally, like, I feel like if she has to do stuff on her phone during the day up to about 5 o'clock, you know, even if I'm with her, I understand this is work stuff and it has to be done.
Yeah.
But when she starts getting work texts at 6:30 at night or at 8 o'clock at night or whatever, that's when I start going, now, wait a minute. Have I given up too much of my relationship to my wife's work? And I'm sure she feels the same. And, you know, with Mello is talking about her husband's on his phone a lot. But, you know, I'll bet, Mello, you're probably, as a realtor, on your phone a lot in the evenings as well, right?
I'm on my phone more than him, I'd say. Yes.
Wow.
I'm on my phone a lot.
And it's like Cody was just saying, you're... perception and his perception are not the same, but his perception is probably, well, that phone must be more important than me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's not wrong, but I do try to limit it during, like, if we're going to a movie or if we're going out to, like, dinner or if we're doing stuff, I do put it away. I don't, like, leave it on the table. I try to, like, create a distance so I have the attention where I want it.
You know, last night we were with my dad, a couple of our friends, and my wife, and we're hanging out. And at a certain point, and I'm going to indict myself on this, at a certain point, I pulled my phone out because there was a lull in the conversation. It didn't seem like there was a lot going on. I'm like, maybe I'll check on the ball game, or maybe I'll go and check on Facebook and see if, because I knew I had to do news this morning. Maybe I'll see if there are any news stories to get to. And I felt like these were, first of all, it was a lagging conversation. Second of all, these were important things I needed to get to. But the message I sent wasn't, hey, there's a lag in the conversation. These are important things I need to get to. The message I sent to everyone else in that room was, this phone right here, I need to look at it right now instead of talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if nothing else, like, it's becoming more aware of that signal, right? Of whether I mean to shut everyone out or not. You know, it's, hey, let me just maybe give a little bit more attention and be a little bit more intentional about my attention here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the signal that I'm potentially going to send to the people around me, especially your spouse or your significant other.
So maybe that's the key right there, is being cognizant of it. And maybe that can affect the way you behave in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Those signals and responses are everything in a relationship. Yes.
Yeah. I had so much today. We have 1 minute left. I had so much today I was going to ask you about.
Yeah.
I had, my daughters were both in high school when COVID hit, and they experienced the masking, the no school, the online school, the 6 foot distance and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish we had a lot of time to talk about that, but I would like to have you back, Cody, if we can.
Absolutely.
At some point.
Yeah, anytime.
Learned so much today, and a lot of it is, Mello, for both of us, some self-awareness about things we got to work on. So
yeah. Absolutely.
We're not perfect yet.
What? No, we're not.
You're not perfect. I'm getting there.
Andy might be. Yeah.
No, she's closer than me, I think.
Yeah.
But I just think that, like you said, Cody, awareness is the start, right? Being aware of what kind of signal you're sending. And like you said, it may be you're not meaning to send that signal, but you're sending it nonetheless.
Right.
You know, this may be really important that I answer this text, but all they're seeing is you're on your phone looking at that instead of listening to me.
Yeah. And there's important things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
keeping in mind what that other person might be perceiving.
Yeah. We used it up. His name is Cody Baxter, SNS Counseling. Cody, man, it's been enlightening talking to you today. I really feel like I've learned so much and want to learn more.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you for coming in. Mello, thanks for your contribution today, as always. It's been a pleasure. We're out of time. Tomorrow, Steve Dunham will join me here on the air.